In one role I had, I spent a lot of time with our CTO. I'd be like, "Why do you have no women?" And he would say, "We want women. Like, we literally were trying." He's like, "But women are in a lot of demand in these high tech roles. Like, in our salary bands, our salary bands." I was like, "I think we can be a little bit more intentional, and we can get what we're looking for." And I kind of was always pushing it. And then in my career, I've had a lot of opportunity to build a team. And in some cases, there are groups or areas that are very much male. And for whatever reason, that ended up that way. And I think that there are opportunities to hear other voices and to bring in different perspectives. And no one questioned that the group was entirely male. So they can't really question when I say, "I think we should bring in a woman into this group." Like, that is, you didn't question when you hired five men into this group. So why are you going to question the opposite? I remember, 15 years ago, feeling sort of like wasn't sure that I was being recognized for what I was doing. And it just felt very sort of plateaued in terms of what the opportunities were.
I had a similar experience in my career, kind of making a move because the leadership was not. It wasn't a good fit for me, but you raise a good point, right? So at this stage in your career, you've got a better understanding of what a successful organization looks like for you to be successful. So aside from leadership, what are some of the other things that you look for? What's the other criteria that you evaluate to say, this is a good opportunity for me? Welcome to the She's So Sweet podcast, where we interview accomplished women who have worked their way to the C-suite. I'm your host, Christy Falteruso, Chief Customer Officer and award-winning Customer Success Executive. I'm so thrilled to introduce today's guest, Michelle Engel, Chief Product Officer at User Testing. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Christy. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know that we had a little time before off camera to talk about why I started this. And so you know that today's conversation with you specifically is really important for me. I'm so thrilled to feature a female in a chief product officer role because there is, quite frankly, not enough of us.
Not enough at all. It's true. It's my every day. I see it.
Very good. Well, listen, before we get into all the good stuff, I want to start by telling the listeners a little bit about user testing and talk about your role a little bit and kind of what it entails as a CPO. So if you could share with us a little bit about that.
Sure. User testing, for those out there who aren't familiar, is a platform, a technology that's used by many of the brands that you all know and love. And what we do is we help connect the designers and researchers who are behind those products with real people that they can talk to, and they can vet their ideas, and they can get real feedback and understand whether their concept is going to resonate, whether the design is easy to use, lots of scenarios like that. So it was a product that, as a chief product officer, my team had been using. We work with, again, like the largest brands out there. And the opportunity came up and they approached me, and I was like, this is awesome. This is a product that actually serves the product management community, the design community, UX teams, which I've led for many, many years, and is purpose-built for them. So sort of like preaching to the choir, like, sure, sounds great. So I have been there for about 15 months. What is the role is super interesting because I accepted the role. I was super excited about it. I loved who I was working with, team. And on my first day, my new boss called, and he said, "Hey, I just want to let you know that as of, it's still quiet, but as of Thursday, we are being acquired, we're being taken private, and we're merging with our nearest competitor." So this whole role I talked to you about of laying out the future and the direction, and we're still going to do that. We're absolutely going to do it. But first, we're going to merge with this other company, and your role is going to look a little bit different as you're like figuring out, how to do that. So it's a different problem to solve. But ultimately, it's been very fun. So the role is leading the product management, user experience, design, organization, working with engineering to figure out what is the go forward product? What are we doing here? How do we position it for our customers? How do we make sure that it kind of meets both customer based needs and kind of sets us up for the future? So it's been fun.
That's a wild first day. How did that change ultimately what you thought the role would be? So obviously this time, I'm sure you spent majority of that navigating these changes. What was the reality versus your perception coming in?
It's been really interesting. I think that I use this analogy of like I score everything. So I'm like, you know, generally speaking, it's an A. Like I am happy. I'm at like north of 90%. But some weeks have dipped because, you know, two organizations coming together, being owned by a private equity company, we had to take costs out. So, you know, I spent 8 weeks getting to know a team and then another 8 weeks learning another team and then deciding, you know, what did we need for the future? Who was staying, who was going? It wasn't necessarily, again, what I signed up for, but it was great. It was fine. And people were very professional and supportive through the whole thing. And then it's a lot of time spent just really trying to understand both products and talking to our customers and making them happy and excited about the future, which is the role. So generally speaking, that kind of overlaps. It's just this question of like, oh, I want to do new and different things. And instead I'm like, you know, within this universe, how do we stitch this together? But I think I stay focused on the goal of like, we are going to have something kick-ass when it's done. And it's going to leapfrog what we wanted to build because we're sort of combining the two together. So we get there a lot faster. So not quite the role, but it's been fun and it's been, not without its challenges. And I think one of the things personally that I like, you know, even through earlier stages in my career was always in my performance review was that I'm very adaptable. Like change does not scare me. So, you know, I was like, okay, I'll just jump right into this. Like it keeps things new and interesting and fresh and there's always a new challenge. So. I was probably a good fit for this kind of jerked around thing. So,
well, I think you handled it with grace and the way a real leader should, because to your point, we've got to be amenable to these changes and these challenges, and being flexible is a big part of it. So I guess not being so rigid on what you thought the role would be versus what its reality kind of turned out to be, you're handling it very well. All right, yeah. Listen, I got to take a step back because I have to imagine that as a young girl, your aspirations were not one day to be a chief product officer. Now, I always say that, and I always say, I assume that that's the case. So maybe I don't want to make an assumption here. But when you were young, what did you think your career would look like? What did you have aspirations to become?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation, right? Like every kid goes through this evolution of what they want to be. And it's sort of defined by like your universe of what you know. So, you know, in high school, I was like, I would like to be a veterinarian. I love animals and animals are soft and fuzzy and that's what I should be. And then I was sort of on this track and I took AP biology and my high school group of friends, we're still very close, of them, three went on to become doctors. So when we got into AP biology, not dissect a thing. I was like, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And I would sit on a chair below the lab desk and they would do all the cutting and they'd be like, oh, this is so cool. Look at this. Look at what the little piggy ate for lunch or whatever. And it was just so gross. And I was like barely holding it together. And I would sit there and take the notes and write up the report. But I was like, okay, clearly this isn't going to be for me. So that was the first sort of red flag that maybe like the biology doctor veterinarian was not going to be a fit. So then by the time I finished high school, you know, I was raised with parents who were really interested in other cultures and traveling, and I experienced a lot. And so I went into college and I applied as an international relations major. And that was sort of my thing that I wanted to do. And my dad was, I'm an only child. I'm a girl. Super supportive, but always very adamant that I was going to work. Like that was part of his, he was raised without a lot of means. And he was like, you need to always be employable. That was like drilled into my head. And so we would go and we would meet people and I would say, I'm an international relations major. He did not like that. He would be like, she's a business major. She's a business. And I was like, I'm not a business major. I didn't apply to the business school. I'm not a business major. And he would say it all the time. And I think that ultimately it sort of sunk in. So I added on economics to make my father happy and give him some level of business piece. But what I wanted to do was study languages and live in cool cities. So for me, what did I want to do? I wanted to live somewhere else and experience cool things, but the work part was sort of secondary to it. So I did this international relations major. I studied abroad, but I had the economic side. So I think ultimately it probably was for the best because it probably helped me get my job. But what I wanted to do was, I don't know, be a tour guide, live abroad, do fun, exciting things in other countries. So it is funny how it all, you know, works out as you get older. But yeah.
Okay, so you have to tell me, what is the coolest place you've ever been?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I feel like all of my answers are just a little generic of like, oh, this city in Europe. But I lived abroad in Japan for 6 months, and I absolutely love that. And we were in a city that was still a really large city in Japan, but not a tourist city. There's no reason a tourist would really go there. So it was such a cool experience to sort of be truly the foreigner and stand out like a sore thumb and, you know, sort of catch people's attention, and people would try to talk to me. And it was a great way to sort of beef up my language skills. And really, I lived with a host family, so I got to really be a part of the Japanese culture, and they were so gracious and very happy to help me like understand the culture, take me to different events, and help me experience all these different things. So it was awesome. It was a great way to sort of live in another country and have that experience.
Yeah, because that's not like visiting another country, which I feel like is what I do, the touristy stuff. But you were like immersed in the culture and kind of like grew up for a little bit in that. That's amazing. What a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I definitely encourage anyone to definitely do that, study abroad and to live with someone who's there, that exchange portion of it.
I'm going to add that to my list, my growing list of things I'm recommending for my daughter to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Step one, get into college. all right. Well, listen, I want to reflect on your career because you've had an amazing journey here. What would you say were some of the most pivotal moments for you or the decisions that you feel like contributed to your ascent to the C-suite?
Interesting, because I came out of college and I took a job with JP Morgan, and I was coming out as an international relations and economics major, and this program that was recruiting was called Global Technology and Operations. I was like, I heard the word global and technology, and I was like, yeah, that sounds great. I'll do that. And then I got there, and it was a while ago, so I fully admit it was a long time ago, but the job was what I was assigned was a man who worked for JP Morgan. He had worked there for almost 50 years and he wanted to retire. So think about how old I am. He had been there 50 years when I was coming out of college. He was tracking capital flows between countries manually with a calculator and paper that came out of like a very large machine, and he would total it. And he wanted to retire. So my first role was to write down everything that this man did so that we could build technology to do it and he could go retire. And it was just a strange way to sort of come into the world. I also realized really quickly that while it said global and technology, it was definitely not the right fit for me. But in that role, I had a leader who was a woman working in an investment bank for her whole career. So she had come through like the 70s and the 80s working in an investment bank. And she was super supportive and really sort of helped me navigate how to work through that investment bank. So I was able to switch to a new training program that was much more of like a internal consulting, and you moved around every 6 months. And like I said, I love change. So it was perfect for me, but it really helped me sort of expand out my career set and learn or my skill set and learn just so much more about me and what I wanted to do and what I was looking for. And so it's a funny journey to how I ended up sort of all the way on the product management side and in this technology piece without really having a technology degree or a STEM degree. But it was more around the skills that those kind of early leaders showed in terms of, you know, empathy and understanding customers and sort of decision-making and communication and helping me build up that sort of broad base to be able to apply it to a lot of different roles. So ultimately, I think that sort of those early leaders and role models are important. And then once I had switched over and I was working in sort of startup land, I've always managed to find these strong leaders that are supportive of my career. Some of them are women and some of them are not, but they've really been sort of instrumental in helping me grow and find opportunities that lead to the next thing. So it's been an interesting journey because I've definitely, I had read once, I guess it was Sheryl Sandberg's book, but she had talked about how women tend to turn down career opportunities because they think they don't know enough yet. So they think, oh, that's too big of a leap. I'm not ready for that. I'm not going to do that. And for me, I was always like, if you think I can do that, if you're offering me this, then I must be able to do it. I always took it as sort of a, like a confidence builder sort of thing. So when new opportunities would present themselves, even if I didn't sort of know everything about it or feel like I 100% could do all of the things required, I just jumped in. So I think that helped me sort of always kind of take opportunities when they presented themselves. And that sort of always moved me up along the way. And it's interesting because my husband, on the other hand, is very much a, like, do I know enough to do this job? How does my skills currently relate? And I'm like, just do it, do it. If the person thinks you can do it, you'll be fine. They're the, you know. So I think, like, if we're talking about, like, how did I get to where I am? I think it was really finding those right, positions and leaders where I had people who respected me and understood what I was contributing and then pulled me to the next thing. So, you know, I followed a boss three different places, because I always was able to sort of move up as I went. And I think that ultimately that's sort of how you can sort of establish your brand and your reputation. And you always come in from a position of trust with your leader and things like that. But it's hard to find that right person.
It definitely is. And in fact, I think that most people in their career will find a lot of the wrong people as leaders before they find the right ones.
For sure. For sure. And I have had that as well. I ended up at user testing because I ended up with the wrong leader and it just wasn't going to work for me. And I, you know, eventually recognized that and realized that I was sort of stalled out by working for that person, that organization, and ultimately landed in a much better place by making the decision to look at and see what else was out there.
I had a similar experience in my career, kind of making a move because the leadership was not, it wasn't a good fit for me, but you raise a good point, yeah. Right? So at this stage in your career, you've got a better understanding of what a successful organization looks like for you to be successful. So aside from leadership, what are some of the other things that you look for? What's the other criteria that you evaluate to say, this is a good opportunity for me? The She's So Sweet podcast is brought to you by Client Success. Client Success is an all-in-one customer success platform to help post-sale implementation and success teams manage customers from new to renew. Through an industry-leading platform approach, Client Success gives businesses an in-depth view into customer health, product usage trends, along with churn and risk data so that your team can not only retain customers, but help them grow as well.
Whether it's managing customer onboarding workflows in shared portals, building custom health scores, tracking sentiment with NPS surveys, or doing more with less through AI and automations, client success gives customer success professionals a true one-stop platform to manage all aspects of the customer journey. To learn more about the industry's fastest to implement customer success platform, visit www.clientsuccess.com. That's client success. Simple, powerful customer success.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think so much of it's like a relationship. If you're leaving one relationship and you're going to the next, the last does influence sort of what you're looking for, what bad experiences you had, or what are the criteria. And when I was leaving my last role, someone said to me, they were like, it's like a bad relationship and you need to take a break. Otherwise, you're rebounding. And your rebound person is never the person you end up with long term. So you need to make sure that you're sort of making those decisions, not from a headspace of where you came, which was very good advice. So for me, I just spent a little bit of time of like, what is important to me and what am I looking for in an organization? And I think that I've worked in JP Morgan and then I moved to startups and I've worked with a number of different founders, and there's always challenges in the founder-led company because they're a person and they're human and they have personality traits and they have their own quirks, and you sort of navigate through that. So you build up this list of like, well, I don't want a founder like this, or I don't want a leader that's like that. So for me, in my job search, I was really looking for something that had some form of a mission that I could get behind. So in my career, I'm at a stage where, you know, I didn't want to be working on a widget or a thing. I wanted it to really like resonate with who I am and be doing some kind of good for the world. So that was sort of first and foremost looking for something that had I looked in sort of the ed tech category and some other really interesting opportunities. And then I really wanted to work with people that I enjoy and that had a corporate philosophy that sort of aligned with my own personal values. So in the organization that I left, we had been pretty progressive in terms of how we supported all employees and the types of policies and the way we approached the employee base. And over time, we had gone public and then we had been taken private again. That philosophy was sort of changing in terms of what was important and how we treated employees. And, you know, that ranges from what holidays you celebrate as a company to, you know, what percentage of the healthcare you cover. There's such a range of how you can support employees and maternity leave and lots of different things. And so I really was looking for a company that was more progressive, more looking to find creative ways to be supportive. And I think that I found that. So as much as it's a strange thing, I was like, tell me more about like, what are the holidays? What is everything? Because I think it says a lot around how you treat the people on your team and the things you'll do to support them as they go through their lives, because you never know what's happening. So I think for me, those were sort of the two. Was like the company culture was really important, and then the mission of what they were doing. And then I think as a woman, when you're interviewing, it really is sort of your spidey sense of the people you're talking to. So I have told people this, but I work for a man named Andy McMillan right now. And in the interview, he was telling me about the chief data scientist, and her name is Ranjitha. And there was just something in the way he was talking about her, the respect that he was showing, and the awe for her skill set and the approach, that I was like, okay, this guy is like, I think is not gender blind, but is definitely like looking more at what are people doing, what are they contributing. I'm going to reward that. And so it gave me a really strong sense that like, and then there were a lot of women in the exec team already, women on the board and things like that, that were sort of little clues for me that I felt like it would be a good fit, if you will.
That's great. It's so important to kind of get that figured out. Similar to you, I started chasing good leaders and people that I want to be around who I felt believed in me, supported me, and created a safe space for me to be an authentic employee, right? And show up as myself every day. And then also trying to find something that aligns with your values and your passions, right? Because if you're passionate about the work that you're doing, it never really feels like work, even on the bad days. So I'm like, it's really good to feel inspired by what you get to do every day. So that's amazing that you were able to narrow that down. I always say, well, I wish I would have been able to narrow that down like 10 years ago, but that's okay. I'll take it now.
Yeah. And I think it's a place of privilege, right? To be able to take the time and be thoughtful and think about things and all of those. And I fully appreciate that. But I think you go through life and you learn those lessons and you sort of get to this point where you have those choices.
All right, let's talk about some tough things, because I know, especially in the universe that you operate, which is primarily male-dominated, right? We're in product engineering. So what were some of the significant challenges or obstacles that you feel like you had to face in your career, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, there have been a couple. And I think that finding the right leader is so critically important. And I think that I have been pretty fortunate to be able to find those people to help navigate through. And really, when I felt stuck, had the opportunity to have mentors and role models that I can go to for help and figure out how to get out of a certain situation or navigate through it and find new ways. So I remember, 15 years ago feeling sort of like wasn't sure that I was being recognized for what I was doing. And it just felt very sort of plateaued in terms of what the opportunities were. And all I did was start talking to people about like what other things were going on in the company and where there might be an opportunity. And I ended up connecting with a leader in another group who was about to take another role to build something new and cool. And I was like, take me. And so I think you being able to recognize when you might be stuck or not being recognized and then sort of, you don't have to just, quit and leave, but luckily, like there are other opportunities that might even be just in front of your face. You just have to sort of start to have those conversations and network and things like that, which I think is sort of the tougher part for people to sort of decide how to navigate through those. I think in terms of like battle scars of sort of overlooked for things or things like that, I really truly do feel that I've been kind of fortunate in that I don't have a technical background, but I've been able to sort of stake my claim for being able to understand product management, understand technology enough to be a good leader. And I think that when you're in technology, it's really more about the leadership side than it is sort of your technical skills. Like I was not trying to be a developer or code. I was trying to build cool, interesting things and use my creativity. And I think that having that ability, there are definitely roles that I've interviewed for in the past where it was like, well, she's not technical enough. And I was like, is that really the skill set here? Because I don't think that's what's needed, to be successful. So it's been interesting to, especially in the world of product management, sort of looking for ways to find really interesting products and work on them and build things. So I think that it's fun, but I've had my share of crazy bosses and, it's like paper cuts of frustration and things. But I think ultimately, sometimes that pain causes you to take a different path and go a different way. And you can leverage that to sort of continue to grow.
I love that. I love your ability to take something that may be perceived as something negative and realize that it's an opportunity to reroute yourself. And clearly it's yielded some positive outcomes for you professionally.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know about you, but one of the things that I struggle with is being able to reflect back on my successes. If you asked me about all of my failures, I'd probably be able to quickly list off countless failures and ones that I'm proud to celebrate. But we don't celebrate our successes enough, right? And I think we always can harp on some of the bad things that happened. I'd like to celebrate your successes with you. So when you think back to your proudest moments or your biggest accomplishments in your career, what are some of those?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And you're right. We don't do it enough at all. And especially sometimes, you know, you don't want to be bragging or all of those different things. So we're sort of taught to diminish right. ourselves. I think for me in my career, I worked for a startup that ultimately went public. And even though that public offering was not the best and it was not a great economy, I think that celebrating that achievement, like having built that company and having built that product and seeing it go and ultimately get us in this company to a point where we're, you know, going onto the New York Stock Exchange was really sort of this like, wow, this was great. And it's an interesting story, but I had worked at a different company for 6 years and I really did enjoy the work. And in 2008, when the recession hit, there wasn't a lot going on in that company and things were kind of tough. And I followed a boss and I went to another company and, you know, ultimately I'm here and it's all worked out. But a few years later, the company that I left because it was struggling went public and people who were still there were celebrating that. And I was very happy for them, but I was like, ooh, did I leave too soon? Like, should I have stuck it out? And then kind of getting to get to that achievement on my own and as part of this other organization, it just felt really good. It's a good way to celebrate what you've been building if you're in technology. And then from there, we were public for a while and then we were acquired. And I think, when we were acquired, we were working through like, what is the right product to keep and what should be the offering, similar to where I am today. And, we kept our product because it's a better product. And it was just a really nice accomplishment to be like, we're comparing these two things. They do similar things and ours is better. Like this one wins.
The one I built, it wins.
The one I built wins. And it was like, yes. So I think there's that. I think that, also sort of, when I left my last job, I had been there for a while. And I was choosing to leave and, you know, people would say things like, oh, you're going out on a high note or like, you know, you're making this decision to leave at this pinnacle. And then a lot of people just took the time to write me notes and I would get like a little box and someone sent me a book with a note or someone gave me a plant and a little present about, and it was like a little money tree that was growing or whatever. But it just really meant a lot of like, the reflection on like, hey, you have been so supportive of my career over the past few years or in this personal situation or helping me navigate this. And it was just it's a really nice way to leave a role as when. And it sort of stuck with me that then as, you know, people have left where I am today, I try to always sort of reflect back on my relationship with them and send them a quick note of, you know, thank you for how you've done this or that. And I think it means a lot to people because it is hard to decide to leave. Sometimes you're very frustrated and it's the right thing, but other times you're sort of making those decisions for different reasons.
Well, I think that's amazing. It's clearly a true testament to you as a leader, right? Because not everyone gets celebrated on their way out. And so you should be really proud of all you've accomplished there and the impact that you've made on all those people, because I think that's the more important legacy we want to leave behind. Good code and great product is wonderful. But more importantly, as a leader, it's the impact you have on others around you. So I think that is, for me, as I hear your stories, that's the one that I think I would celebrate with you the most.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, I mean, it does feel so good. Like when people leave and they maybe start their own company or, you know, go on to lead certain teams or all those things. And you always have those people who, you know, they're leaving because they got this great opportunity. And I think it's awesome. Yeah.
Well, listen, one of the things that I love to say and that I think sticks with me as a female leader is that saying of empowered women empower women. And I feel like I definitely did not grow up in a time where women were empowering other women. In fact, we were probably pitted against each other as competition. And so now I like to live in la la land and assume that we're all here to empower and uplift each other because that's the reality I choose to live in. So what are you doing to empower other women, right? You're in this leadership role and I know that you're active in your community. What do you do to help elevate the profile of other women?
Yeah, I think a few things. So I think like the base level for what I can do is sort of in my last role, I was the ERG sponsor for the women's focused ERG. In this role, I am the LGBTQ+ ERG sponsor, which I still think sort of intersects with it. And I think that that sort of like the mentoring and the finding those ways to get involved is sort of like the table stakes. And I feel like where I am more impactful is sort of how I'm leading my own team and how I influence what we do as a company. So I think for me personally, I'm pretty, I don't keep it a secret when I'm hiring for a role. And I really think it should be a woman. So, or I want to make sure that our recruiting is very balanced. So in my career, I've had a lot of opportunity to build a team, which is great. And in this role, I'm sort of inheriting a team. And in some cases, there are groups or areas that are very much male. And for whatever reason, that ended up that way. And I think that there are opportunities to hear other voices and to bring in different perspectives. And, no one questioned that the group was entirely male. So they can't really question when I say, I think we should bring in a woman into this group. Like that is, you didn't question when you hired 5 men into this group. So why are you going to question the opposite? So I try to be very intentional in the sense of how I coach the rest of my organization in recruiting and making sure that we're looking, across a broad population and, and we want to make sure we have the best and we have qualified people and all of those things. But I think that we also get better by ensuring that we have a diverse set of opinions and, we build products for a diverse set of people. And we need to make sure that we have that as part of how we think about who is designing this product, who is researching this product, who's building this product. So, and I feel like it's one place where I can be more impactful is in my organization. So whether it is the recruiting side, but also, how we support women when they come in, how we support women and men across the journey of whatever's happening in their lives. So if it's, they're having children and they're trying to balance all of those different things, or they have to take care of their parents or their own health or something like that. Like, I think all of those kind of play into it of how we help people be successful in their roles. But I think the thing I think probably putting the stake in the ground is really how we recruit and how we look at the panel of applicants and are more intentional in bringing, talented women into the organization.
I think it's important. I think it's most important though. I was going to say in the ecosystem in which you operate, right? Because we talked about this earlier, as I look for candidates for these interviews, how difficult it is for me to find females in this role, right? In CTO roles and in chief engineering roles. So I think that, I commend you because you're actually creating the future females in this industry. And so not a lot of people are that committed to it. And I think it needs to happen. So I think it is something you should be very proud of, that you're building the future leaders of tomorrow.
Yeah. And I think, in one role I had, I spent a lot of time with our CTO. I'd be like, why do you have no women? Why are there no women? And he would say, we want women. Like, we literally were trying. He's like, but, women are in a lot of demand in these high tech roles. Like in, our salary bands are salary bands. I was like, I think we can be a little bit more intentional and we can get what we're looking for. And I kind of was always pushing it. And then we were acquired by a company that owned a few other companies and they took us on a roadshow and we were in another company that was like a better brand based in Austin. And we were walking the floor. There were women everywhere. And I was like, look at all the women that they are able to recruit. And then, you know, I think as a woman, when you're interviewing, and you and I were talking about this earlier, like it matters who you're interviewing with. It matters your comfort level. Yeah. And it matters how you feel you can talk about yourself and you can ask questions. And I think that when women in tech now are in demand, and they should feel good about that and use that and harness that power. But if you're interviewing and it's a group of, you know, people who don't look like you or aren't, you know, connecting with you, then I think it's tougher to decide to go to that role versus if you're interviewing with someone that is a woman and who's a manager or a director, and you can kind of see that the company has that path, is great.
I think it's really important work that you're doing, and I think something you should be really proud of. Now, you did touch on in the experiences of employee balance. Well, I want to hear about your balance. I know that with so many C-level women out there and just professionals in general, right, gender agnostic, it's hard to create balance in our lives, right, with our careers and with work. How do you navigate a work-life balance or create boundaries that work for you so that you can have a life outside of your career? So what habits have you kind of put in place?
Yeah, I think it depends on the stage in your life, right? Like, I think that when my kids were young, it looked different than it does now. And when my kids were young, I was like, the more time with them was the priority. So I tried to keep things into very compartmentalized boxes and would sort of do work after the kids went to sleep. And that was how I could leave work in time to make sure I had dinner and all of those different things. But I was willing to make that sacrifice and that change, that piece. And I worked somewhere that was willing to sort of let me do that. And I think that work-life balance thing looks different as you have different priorities and different challenges in your life. But I think it's really about prioritizing what's sort of needed for you. So for me, once my kids were a little older, I really needed to exercise. And I figured out that, like, if I sat at a desk all day long, I just would come home and have no energy. I would just want to sit on the couch and eat and watch TV. And so I figured out that if I figured out where exercise fit in some way, whether it was before work or lunch or after work, I did the whole rest of my life so much better. And so for me, that was what I tried to prioritize as the kids got older, was like, how do I work this into my schedule and what does it look like? And even now, I still very much look at my schedule and sort of figure out where the spots are, and I block different time for making sure that I can do that and have that balance. So it's definitely, it's almost like at first you have to prioritize the work-life thing and what you want for yourself, and then finding those creative ways to make sure that sort of what is that priority, what's most important for you, and how to make that work. I have a guy on my team that I was on a call with today who he's in the UK. So he really wants to pick his kids up from preschool. And so he leaves sort of it a bit earlier, but then he's back on and the kids are making an appearance during the call and it's all fine, but it's sort of, he's like, this is my priority. I do pick up. I'm like, okay, that's great. We can make it work. So, yeah, I think it's that how you set those prioritization is key for sure.
I definitely agree. Listen, as you continue to evolve in your career, obviously, this isn't it for you. I don't think that this is where you're hanging your hat forever. Maybe it is, but what future goals or initiatives are you excited about for your future?
Yeah, that's always been a tough question for me because, you know, I kind of take opportunity as it right. presents itself. I think that for me personally, so almost 2 years ago when I was switching roles, I also decided to switch what I was doing from a volunteer perspective. So I had been really active in a program called Girls on the Run. I had been on the board for 6 years. And I loved it, but I was ready sort of for what was, so I exited that. I was also volunteering as a coach for this entrepreneurship program through the University of North Carolina. And I've done that for a number of years. And I was like, okay, I'm ready for what's next. And so I exited all of those things and then started this job that's been kind of drinking from a fire hose. And I think for me, what's next is figuring out that other half, the non-work half. Like, I do travel quite a bit, but I want to figure out, like, how do I give back more and what is the right way for me to have impact? It will definitely still be something related to women or the issues that sort of exist there, but whether it's helping women who are exiting the prison system or helping new mothers or something more on the business side of supporting women. I haven't decided yet, but in terms of what's next for me and where I want to spend some energy and focus is sort of deciding where I want to be volunteering my time and how to make that more a part of my life to balance things out for today. So that's definitely at the top of my list. I think for me right now, it's also trying to sort of, you know, I love product. I've been a product person for a long time. I did a small, short journey into marketing. And that was interesting too. But I think that there's ultimately this question of, do I want to try to be a CEO? Do I want to try to be a COO? Do I want to do something that's a little bit broader? And so sort of exploring that from a always open to doing new and different interesting things. So. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to watch your journey. I'm confident that whatever you go and do, it's going to be amazing as your previous experiences have illustrated. Now, before we wrap up today, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away with them?
That one thing. I think it's really that making sure that you're looking out for yourself. So whether that's your career, your personal life, your relationships. I think that women tend to sort of feel this pressure of whether it's holding the team together to deliver whatever it is they're delivering or holding their family together, or all those different things. And I think that it's really important to focus on sort of yourself, your health, your journey, your boundaries, whatever they are, and then advocating for that. So if you need help in one area of your life, finding the ways to get that help, if it's asking more of your partner or finding some form of a support system, or the role is not working for you and kind of bouncing that off a mentor and deciding if it's time to go. But I think it's really about advocating for yourself. And, you know, there's so much that we do to support other people in our lives. And I think that sometimes what gets lost is sort of what's best for you and really thinking about sort of, is this helping move my life forward and, you know, making me happy.
I love that so much. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank
your journey
you.
Has been so inspiring. I'm really excited to continue to watch what happens with user testing and obviously the rest of your career. So thank you so much for joining us today. For our listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, please feel free to rate us, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, subscribe on YouTube, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you again, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. I want to share a bit about an organization that I support called Wednesday Women. They're on a mission to increase the visibility of executive women leaders that you should know, learn from, and be inspired by. On LinkedIn, they share the profile of two amazing women each week, on Wednesdays, of course. And now just imagine if we all followed, amplified, and nominated the women that we want to see more of. Their initiative provides examples of women CEOs, founders, sales executives, technical leaders, and so many more. By supporting Wednesday Women, you'll see more of these professionals in your social feeds, of course, but also on stages, podcasts, and panels. If you're interested in learning more and supporting their initiative, head over to www.wednesdaywomen.org or follow them on LinkedIn.